This is a story about the terror and torture that I and others endured passively, like scared wombats, until we finally gained our zombie takeout. Hello and welcome to episode 429 of Zombie Takeout.
Zombie Takeout.
The B-Movie and Cult Movie Show. I'm John.
And hello, I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, just a couple of things I wanted to mention. These are TV related, but we're not doing a TV show this week. And honestly, this isn't enough for a full episode, at least not yet. So I just want to mention on Friday the 20th, the day after this episode goes live, the Animaniacs reboot will be starting on Hulu. For any of us out there who adored it back in the 90s.
It's always a good watch.
Oh, yeah. I've read a couple of reviews of, reviewers who've gotten, access to previews or, early episodes. And it's apparently just a 2020 version of the original. Same humor, same style. Just, the updated references.
I'm not sure what else they could do with it. The more I think about it. It was a weird premise even back then because it was the throwback to the 30s, cartoons anyway, except, zanier and more hip, I guess you could say.
And of course,
for the time,
Pinky and the Brain will be there, will be part of it as well.
They were the best part, of course. Yeah. Orson Welles kind of thing going on.
It was explained to me on Twitter, or not explained to me personally, but I saw on Twitter the explanation for why the sister is called Dot. It's the period after BROS.
Oh, yeah. The Warner Brothers Dot.
Yeah. Also, since next week is Thanksgiving here in the U.S., we'll be taking the week off.
I needed this.
Yeah. On Thanksgiving Day, there will be the MST3K Turkey Day Marathon, an entire day of MST3K episodes. For once, I don't have to come up with an excuse to stay home from the family gathering to watch it. Most years I do that.
What channel is that on?
It'll be on Pluto. It's streaming. It'll be on Pluto. It'll be on their YouTube channel. It's in a number of places. Just Google MST3K Turkey Day Marathon 2020. You'll get a list. And of course, the night before that will be my annual viewing of Thanksgiving. I've watched it every Thanksgiving Eve or Thanksgiving Day initially since we reviewed it. It doesn't look like it's streaming free anywhere this time, so I'm not necessarily going to recommend it per se. But if you happen upon a copy and you've never seen it, it's definitely worth checking out. And with that,
that brings us to this these used to be available free too, and
without any further ado,
rough night last night.
On to this week's movie from 1987, Lust for Freedom. Of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Due Process, serving narrative convenience since 1952.
Also brought to you by Soundtracks. When using a soundtrack, for fuck's sake, have more than two songs.
I've never heard so much Grim Reaper in my life, and I never want to hear them again. And I like hair metal.
This one, between a review of Scorpions and this movie, I'm kind of like, oh man, I really, really not into it anymore. And this reminded me of Slapshot, where they had the one song they repeated over and over again in that movie too. But all right, so we have a cop who's in love with her partner, and of course I'm like, well, how is this winding up getting her thrown in prison? Did she get framed for something? Did something happen? Yeah, but
there's this bust that goes bad because of a rookie that can't keep his cool, and it just goes tragic. And you think that's how she's going to end up in prison? No,
well,
it's much
right.
more contrived than that.
It's and they're like pretty much the Beastie Boys had to have watched this before making the sabotage video, because it's clearly what they were going off of, the quote unquote undercover cops.
Yeah, and the costuming was very 70s, even though it was filmed in 85.
Yes. Oh, 85. I thought it was even later than that.
It was released in 87, filmed in 85.
Wow. Okay. All right. So the bus goes bad, and her fiance dies in the middle of it. And she just, of course, shuts down and pretty much leaves everything behind, and just drives out west. The beginning looked very Jersey, by the way. That whole, just the nature of it, and the, I guess, the dumpster too.
I think it
But
was filmed in Nevada, if I remember from the credits.
yeah,
Nevada, sorry.
well, I mean, obviously, when she goes out west, they're in a different, state. But I just
Oh,
thought
yeah.
that beginning, the bus scene, that was all, just at some industrial park in Jersey.
Well, if Troma filmed that part, entirely possible, because Troma is based in
Yeah.
Jersey, so.
It just reminded me a lot of it. And so she drives out till the middle of nowhere, and she winds up picking up an escaped con in a party dress. And at least she notes that that's odd too. And there's people chasing after her. But first, they're just in an unmarked van. And then finally, a cop car comes in, and she pulls over. And the escape con runs out of her car. And you expect her to just be arrested outright
Well,
there
she
for
notes that
aiding
that's
and
odd
abetting.
too, because she notes a lot of things.
Right. But they don't. Instead, they ask her to come back to the first, what he says, the station, to make a statement. When but then she gets taken back to the prison, which again, well, that's odd, but
Bum bum bum.
this goes along with it. And sure enough, she gets I guess you could say Mickey'd, Shanghai'd. I don't know. It's this whole white slavery ring that they've got going on, and so she winds up in this prison ran by sadistic guards and wardens and drug dealers themselves, pretty much. And it's really just a white slave ring that they're very open about.
Also, the cop, the main cop, the sheriff, maybe the only decent actor in the movie.
Right. And he's expressing doubts, even though he's fully playing along and bringing more people in and lying to parents looking for their missing daughter. They have a few, well, they bring them to some other a quote unquote doctor to look them over, who's really, of course, a buyer of them. They don't really make it clear how else they make money off this thing.
Well, you kind of get the
Because,
impression that the warden is selling snuff films.
well, yes, that's true. He's selling snuff films, so he's using people for that too. And why they would need all of these women there, I don't know. Maybe just to fight each other, but it's a fake prison that these are women in. And so she forms a plan somehow, or actually she vows several times to fight. There's a few points where, low points, where she is, and I vowed from this point on I'm going to fight to get out of here, okay? And then something else bad happens, and I vowed from this point on I'm going to avenge this person.
It should be noted that the main character, Jillian, monologues throughout, has a, voiceover throughout the entire fucking movie.
Yes. And I have a theory about that we'll get into, of course, when we review. So she finally puts a plan into action, or really, it's the one cop, the sheriff, decides to help her out. And that's when the big escape scene happens, where they sing songs from Les Miserables, and hilarity ensues.
Just a little, starting off with a little bit of trivia, because I think I know what your theory is, and I agree. The film was originally shot at a cost of 50 grand in 85 under the title of Georgia County Lockup. In 86, Troma Team provided 125,000 to alter the film for a theatrical release. The film premiered at Cannes in 87 before premiering theatrically the following year. And yeah, I think the voiceover was added by Troma. That's where you're going?
Right. I think they originally filmed this as is, and it made even less sense than it does now than the final product.
At the
The dubbing
beginning,
is horrendous too.
the guy they're trying to get in the sting at the very beginning of the film, the bust, is named Jonathan Troma, which was kind of the tip off that okay, Troma added this. Otherwise, the right that or the original writer was a huge Troma fan, but I suspect that was added by Troma, which
Oh,
does.
that makes a lot more sense then. They tack that on.
It's kind of like Blade Runner. I mentioned Blade Runner in my titles, in one of my perspective titles. That was done in Blade Runner because they thought it made no sense, and they, I think the movie company wanted to tacked on that monologue to kind of carry people through it.
So the but this time I think they were right. I think if this product were as is without that narration, I don't even think the original had good audio, you know? I think
There
you
was a
could
lot
hear
of
shit.
dialogue without mouths moving, which I got a kick out of.
Yes. Like they I don't know if they had a decent mic when they filmed it or something. Either that or they somehow found a way to dull the sound of the original enough, but I don't think they did.
No. I will say it had some decent fight choreography, particularly in the beginning. There was one really
Oh,
good
yeah.
fight scene. The Grim Reaper song doesn't really fit the opening theme, the song Lust for Freedom, but Rock
Right.
You to Hell does work in the scene where she's getting set up.
At first, I thought Rocky to Hell was the theme song they were going to use for the two guys in the van, the two guards. And then they just started playing it willy-nilly throughout the movie. It was for any action scene going on, just about. And yes, I counted seven times.
Oh God, you actually did count that. Wow.
Yes. I was just like, wait, what the fuck? Again?
And I just loved the line. Oh, I kind of groaned at the line. Mrs. Pusker was straight out of some low budget prison movie, but this wasn't a movie. This was real.
Really thought that was a strong intro.
Yeah, for real. But flat out at nodding to low budget prison movie. If Troma
Yeah.
did the voiceovers, that I like that.
Yeah. And I think they, without a doubt, did. That was definitely added in.
It's a Troma movie, but it wasn't made by Troma. It wasn't directed by Lloyd, so it does lack the kind of gleeful, wonderfully weird badness that you get with an actual Troma film.
Right, there's a few, good spatters, but a lot of this, it's too serious for a trauma movie. You can't enjoy the genre if it's like, oh, this is really a white slave ring, kind of thing.
And like, during the blanket party, or they called it the kick the bag game, the
Yeah.
moaning just sounded way too porny. And
And
then,
she healed really quickly.
and then of course we get the obligatory lesbian scene, but she's watching that, and then she turns to another cell where one of the heavies is coerce, is coercively raping an inmate, and holding her, at bay with a crossbow, which was an odd weapon. And then in another cell, an inmate is getting whipped. All at the same time.
Right. It was like they had some boxes to check, it felt like.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is like 37 minutes in, And not a whole lot has happened in this movie up to that point, aside from the intro, fight scene. Not much has happened since. So it felt like they were just shoehorning every woman in prison trope. I didn't even see how fast they did it. It felt like it was just in like five, not even 5 minutes.
It was that one scene. It was those three cells she was watching.
Yes. But that she couldn't watch because she was in a cell and they were off to the side.
Well, no, but they cut back to her between them, and she was turning her head like she was watching all three things happen.
Right.
Which was just ridiculous. I think the warden making snuff films was definitely a trauma touch, but
Yeah.
it kind of lacked their usual flair.
Oh, definitely. A trauma movie where a gunshot goes off screen? What the fuck
Exactly.
was that? That's not trauma.
Right. The prison wrestling match was fun, though. I mean, it looked like actual professional wrestling. I think Big Eddie, one of the inmates, was played by Queen Kong.
Oh, yeah.
Or
Yeah.
I think it was Queen Kong, or the one in Glow, who's the larger woman. I recognize her as a professional wrestler from something.
She definitely seemed like one.
And the fight leading up to that in the garden was really nicely done. Although,
And what about what was the name of the inmate she was fighting? The one that was pretty much like a 1940s criminal. What you in for?
When constantly
See?
smoking and
Probably the most fun performance in this
oh
movie. The only one actually having fun.
yeah. The diner set I got a kick out of. At one point, these two people walk into a diner looking for their daughter, and the guy
You caught it too.
running the diner was apparently a shell-shocked vet. The cop, the sheriff shows up and kind of says, "Don't listen to him because, their daughter is actually imprisoned in his jail." But the set itself looked like it could have been a police station or an office building or.
That's the thing. I think that was supposed to be a police station, but it was very obviously a diner.
Well, they dressed it like a diner because that's where it was supposed to happen. But I think it was supposed to be a diner, and but it could have been a police station too. I don't know. Very
They put
obviously a
something
very
up on the
cheap set.
wall like it was supposed to be a police station. But yeah, there was still like a bottle of ketchup on the pickup window, and just there were slot machines. I was like, "What the fuck is this?"
It's set in Georgia County. I Googled, there is no Georgia County anywhere. But there are two references to California in the movie being nearby. So I think
Yeah.
it must be where it was set. The sheriff's performance was good until he confessed to Julian. When he started admitting like everything that he was doing wrong and starting to have a conscience, his performance just went way the fuck over the top.
It was too much of a lift for him to do.
Exactly. Yeah, sure. He was
And
kind of
just
understated for
weird in a
most of it.
trauma film, to have like, it's we're in too deep. I don't know. It's like, what?
Now, I am glad that they broke themselves out instead of relying on the sheriff. That was a nice bit of empowerment. And I
Yeah.
loved the breakout scene. That scene brought out a fucking brain. Just beautifully gory. That trauma must have gotten involved for that scene.
I don't know. I mean,
We finally have some
Yeah, because
proper
there was
violence and
some.
gore.
That's true. There were some. I bet they added some stuff to it, you know?
There were like because the way it was shot, you could they were clearly like establishing shots, and then they'd cut away to a reaction shot where you'd get the gore. I think they kind of cut it up, spliced some stuff in to make it look at least a little bit trauma.
I would say the worst part for me of this was when the guards did the double date thing and they knock
Julian.
Jillian out and they start raping the other one and then they just come back to the prison like nothing had happened.
I think the wrestling scene was right after that,
Yeah.
if I recall.
So it was kind of like, you know what? Now that you mention it, that is probably where this something trauma probably did everything after that, I think. Because none of that, see, none of that makes any sense that they went off like this and, you know, they were going to take care of her and then they just come back after raping her and nothing, and they're acting like nothing happened. So it was really weird, the whole thing. They bring them back from their date. They lock them into a cell and then somehow fail to kill them when they're locked up. Even though they had them already bound on their own, and nobody would question them if they just didn't come back. So I think they,
That's where trauma took
I,
over. Yeah, that would explain the
yeah,
ending.
I think it completely makes sense that somebody else came in and redid the whole thing after that.
Incidentally, Lust for Freedom was Melanie Cole Jolien's only film role. I'm guessing friend of the original filmmaker.
Probably, yeah. Or who knows, you know, how these things work.
On to brands.
No sequels and remakes?
Like I said, that last viol all the violence and gore at the end did buy it a brain. I'm going three.
And I have to take a brain off for the horrendous soundtrack. So I'm going one.
All right, and what have we learned?
We learned that Colonel Sanders was a pimp.
Thank you for pointing that out. I was thinking it earlier. And I learned that not all trauma is created equally.
But those lyrics to Rocky to Hell, there's like I was so bored through some of this, I could actually I was starting to pick out some of the lyrics,
Oh, God.
and I could have sworn there's a line that says, "Brush your teeth and go to bed."
Or actually, the result was it that? Because there was also references to the girl's not brushing by, Colonel Sanders the pimp. So maybe I got a
No,
little
there was a
confused.
line from the song, "Brush your
Okay.
teeth and go to bed." I was like, "Wait, what did he say?" And of course, this is why rock and roll will never die, which I guess that's what I learned. That is why rock and roll died.
And that's it for Lust for Freedom. As I mentioned, we're off next week for Thanksgiving. So until December, when we'll be reviewing Ninja Cheerleaders, that has to be better.
Yeah, it's gotta be.
Until then, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.
Right, recording, fire it. Well.
Where
Oh, no, it's mine.
is
I'm
it
sorry.
yours? Yeah.